Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Fabulous Friday to all of you. It is September the 23rd, 2022, and so happy to be with you. You can call me right now, 888-914-9149. Many of you were not able to get in yesterday. We had wall-to-wall calls all hour long, and we're going to continue that conversation in just a minute. I'll tell you what we were talking about, but once again, that phone number, 888-914-9149. You can also email the show. As always, Cale, C-A-L-E at relevantradio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter. Follow me and I will give you tweets at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And the show account is at Cale Clark Show. Now, yesterday we were talking about souls in purgatory. We played a beautiful video clip from the actor Mandy Patinkin, who responded to a fan who had lost her dad, and the movie that he was in, The Princess Bride, Mandy Patinkin, that is, not the dad, was of great meaning to them, that father and daughter. And he talked about how playing Inigo Montoya in The Princess Bride, he kind of reminded him of his own dad, and when he killed the six-fingered guy, it was like he was trying to kill his dad's cancer, and it was just a beautiful video. Everybody was all choked up. Producer Jim was crying. I was crying. You were crying. And a lot of you guys called in to talk about praying for our loved ones who have passed on. We started talking about the holy souls in purgatory. And there was a guy who wrote a book called Hungry Souls about how sometimes these souls can even manifest themselves on earth. So we're going to talk about that in just a second. And somebody else who certainly prayed a lot for the holy souls in purgatory and suffered a lot while on earth was, of course, Padre Pio. And today is his feast day today. We're going to talk a little bit about the Padre Pio movie that has just been released. I'm going to play you a clip from that movie. Shia LaBeouf, we talked about him. He had his very long conversation, very popular conversation. It's kind of gone viral with Bishop Barron. It's on YouTube about his conversion to Catholicism, which all came about when he played the role of Padre Pio filming this movie. So that's all coming up later. You're not going to want to miss that right here on the Cale Clark Show. Once again, that number, 888-914-9149. So where we left it yesterday was talking about the holy souls in purgatory. Why are they called the holy souls in purgatory? Now, a lot of you guys had questions about this. We were, I think, 12 deep on the phone calls at one point, and we just ran out of time. So I did encourage you, if you're on hold, to try to call back today. So if you're still there, if you're still listening, please do that, 888-914-9149. We talked about how souls in purgatory, we called them the holy souls because they can't really sin anymore, because they've kind of made it in a certain sense. They're guaranteed of going to heaven. It's just a question of their purging experience, their purifying experience. They need to get through that before they can attain the beatific vision of heaven. But they do need our help. We can help them a lot through our prayers and sacrifices. And along those lines, this is where this book, Hungry Souls, by Dr. Gerard van den Aardweg, he's from Holland, as you can imagine from that last name, van den Aardweg. He wrote a book about people in purgatory sort of making little visitations on earth, asking people to pray for them. Is this possible? Can the souls of the deceased appear to men and women today? Well, Genevieve Cunningham, writing at goodcatholic.com, wrote a whole piece about this. And she was kind of examining the work of Dr. van den Aardweg and his book, Holy Souls. And so she says that really these visitations from the afterlife are rare, but they do follow a pattern. They do tend to follow a pattern. And what a lot of people think are ghosts are in fact souls from purgatory who are looking for help. Now, they might be something else too. They might be false apparitions, if you will, evil apparitions from the dark side of the force, as it were, from the devil himself. We'll get into that in just a little bit. We have to be really, really careful about these. But these visitations from souls in purgatory, although rare, they follow a pattern. For example, they are usually looking for holy men and women on earth who can help them in their plight in purgatory. And once they kind of get through this, once they're purified, or when that person can't help them anymore, they've done all they can, they stop visiting them. They stop looking for them. So they're not sort of haunting them for the rest of their lives or anything like that. So the other thing that Dr. Gerard Vandenardweg says is that these souls in purgatory, although they are separated from their bodies, that's what happens at death, or soul is separated from the body, the soul continues to, the body decays, the soul continues on. Of course, there will be a resurrection of the body at the end of days, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Even those destined to go to all eternity, spend all eternity in hell, are going to get their bodies back at the general judgment on the last day. And so Jesus promises this in the scriptures, John chapter 5, in Matthew's gospel as well. And one of the things that Dr. Gerard says is that despite the fact that the souls of purgatory are separated from their bodies, obviously, they still are kind of sometimes displaying recognizable characteristics of the bodies that they had on earth, their face sometimes, and that's they're identifiable, in other words. The other thing, too, is that apparently St. Thomas Aquinas, and obviously a very careful theologian, the angelic doctor, he apparently did look into a lot of this stuff himself, and he studied some of these types of apparitions, and he sort of was able to infer from this that a lot of souls actually do undergo some of their purification here on earth. And so this idea of souls sort of appearing on earth in the form of what people think are ghosts, that might be part of their purification process. Appearing in certain places, maybe with the house they used to live in, or where they committed certain sins in life that they need to atone for. That obviously is something we need to get into here. Are there such things as ghosts? Can our loved ones who have departed, who might be in purgatory, can they appear to us? Okay, well, one of the things that Genevieve Cunningham says is that we have to break down what the word ghost really means. We really have to do this. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. The word ghost actually comes from an old English word, geist. Geist. I suppose that's where the term zeitgeist comes from. Now, the word geist means spirit. So the zeitgeist is kind of the spirit of the age, as it were. So a ghost is really kind of a spirit, a disembodied soul. And so the Catholic Church hasn't actually offered a magisterial teaching, an official teaching on this subject of ghosts. However, as mentioned, St. Thomas Aquinas, other theologians did talk about this. They've actually been talking about this for centuries. So here's what Aquinas had to say. He said, quote, "According to the disposition of divine providence, separated souls sometimes come forth from their abode and appear to people. It is also credible that this may occur sometimes to the souls of the damned, and that for man's instruction and intimidation, they be permitted to appear to the living." End of quote. Wow, that's a fascinating quote from St. Thomas Aquinas, this idea that souls in purgatory can come back and appear to people, and sometimes even the souls of the damned can come back to, he says, instruct and intimidate. In other words, you don't want to go where these folks are. That is an absolutely frightening thought. It's a fascinating thought as well. So it is possible that what people call ghosts can be, at times, departed souls. But of course, there's kind of this dark side. Not every claim of ghostly activity is real. There are a lot of reports of the paranormal. We see this all the time. There are huge communities dedicated to pursuing paranormal events. Remember that old movie, The Blair Witch Project? I mean, people just freak out about things like this. A lot of this stuff is either staged or attributable to natural causes. In other words, there's nothing supernatural going on here at all. And the other thing that's kind of scary is that demons can pretend to be departed souls. So not all quote-unquote ghosts are actually from purgatory. They may be from the pits of hell. And so that's an awfully scary thought, that a demon might try to impersonate a living person who has passed on. And so I actually remember hearing, I forget which saint this was. I remember hearing a story about a saint who was receiving apparitions from someone claiming to be Jesus. Kind of looked like Jesus, kind of was talking like you might think Jesus would talk. And then this saint, I forget who it was, said to this apparition, "Okay, if you're really Jesus, show me your wounds. Show me the wounds of the crucifixion," because of course Jesus kept those in his resurrected body. And obviously this creature was pretending that it had a body. And so when this saint said this, that's when this creature revealed itself to be a demon, because they didn't have the wounds of the crucifixion. Kind of made itself look like Jesus somehow in this appearance. Did not have the wounds of the crucifixion, which of course the devil would hate. These are the marks of our redemption. And then just like that, she's like, "Get out of here." And then the demon took off. So I can't, if you know which saint that was, if you know that I heard it in a homily once, I wish I knew who it was. I couldn't remember. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Now, Gerard Vanden Aardweg, Dr. Gerard Vanden Aardweg, in his book Hungry Souls, he says this, quote, "Some apparitions that present themselves as souls of the dead may indeed turn out to be demons in disguise, seeking to deceive the credulous. So-called manifestations of the dead during magic or occult sessions are by no means the departed persons they pretend to be, but hoaxes or demonic imposters," end of quote. Now, I remember in high school, maybe this happened to some of your friends, there were some people I knew in high school that started fooling around with a Ouija board, and stuff actually started to happen, and it totally freaked them out. So this idea of if you're getting involved in occultic practices or something like that, or some sort of magic, you need to stop that. You're playing with fire. So that's a really good warning there. All right, so having said that there could be false apparitions here, what about the real ones? What about the real ones? I just want to talk for a minute about that. And in fact, one of the things that Vanden Aardweg mentions in his book is a particular soul, a particular person who lived in the 19th century and early 20th century who came into contact with holy souls in purgatory, actual holy souls in purgatory that needed help, and they would seek out her help. And this is really the communion of saints in action. We talked about this yesterday. The church is the communion of saints. There's the church, of course, militant on earth, fighting. We're fighting against the enemy. We're fighting against sin. There's the church in purgatory, being purified. And of course, there's the church victorious in heaven. So this person that he mentions is Eugenie von der Leyen. And I'm guessing she is Dutch as well. Eugenie von der Leyen. And she lived from 1867 to 1929. And apparently she was chosen really by God to help souls in purgatory. She had a lot of encounters with the faithful departed who were all at various stages of being purified. And she never talked about this, kept it all secret. But here's what he says about her in his book, Hungry Souls. He says, quote, "Eugenie was an emotionally stable, amiable, cheerful, and realistic woman. Everyone liked her, especially the children. Her family was of high German nobility. By order of her confessor, she kept a sober and matter-of-fact diary of her contacts with the poor souls, which after her death was handed over to guess who? This diary that she kept about her interactions with souls in purgatory. When she died, that diary was given to Eugenio Pacelli. Now, if you don't know who Eugenio Pacelli is, you might know him better by his papal name. This guy became Pope. He became Pope Pius XII. So he had her diary, he read it, and he thought very highly of it. So what happened to her, this woman named Eugenie von der Leyen, was that these souls in purgatory would appear to her, and at first she didn't quite know what or who she was dealing with, but they would ask her for prayers, for sacrifices, and then she was able to recognize them bit by bit. Features of their faces became recognizable. So here's one little quote from her diary. And this is about how she helped a soul from purgatory who was a Dominican religious. This was a Dominican brother. Imagine that. So just simply being a part of a religious community, being a Franciscan or a Dominican or being a priest or not, it's not a free ticket to heaven, folks. We all have to correspond with God's grace, and lay people do as well, obviously. So this Dominican brother came to her after his death. He's in purgatory, and asked for her help. And she didn't even recognize who this was or what she was dealing with for days. So this is from her diary. She wrote, quote, September the 5th, face was still wholly unrecognizable, a gray lump. He is rather quiet, but mutters incomprehensible words. It seems as if he's speaking in Latin. September the 10th, this is the entry from September the 10th. The Dominican is not frightening, but very often he is around. September the 13th, the Dominican is a father, a priest I have known well, a Frenchman. He was a long time with me, and he nodded yes. He gave his assent when I started praying. September the 17th, I was very sad about something this night, and I cried. Then a hand was laid on my head. I looked up. It was the Dominican. He said, why do you weep? I said, because I am not content with myself. He said, have confidence and be humble. I said, how can I help you then? He said, you can help me by mortification. By mortification. Wow. So making sacrifices. Just as we do very often, especially in the season of Lent, we make sacrifices. We do some fasting. We do some extra prayers. Offer up some things that are unpleasant. Offer them for the holy souls. Very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff. So this woman, Eugenie, she received visits from a lot of souls who were in horrible spiritual states, and they required a lot of purification. And in fact, apparently the way that they appeared to her, it was disturbing. It was unattractive. They were so bad, they could have been mistaken for being the souls of the damned. That's how in rough shape they were. And there's some stuff. And again, I've got to get a hold of this book. I've read snippets from this book. I've seen it. And friends of mine have read it, but I remember reading a little excerpt from the book where this guy talks about souls in purgatory almost manifesting themselves, almost like they almost appear almost animalistic in a certain sense when they start appearing, and then the person prays for them and makes sacrifices for them, and then they start becoming more and more human as they go along, as they are being purified. It's really intriguing, and that's kind of what she experienced with this Dominican. His face was like a gray lump. And then he becomes more himself as she prays for him, makes sacrifices for him. All right. So here's what Vanden Aardweg says in his book, Hungry Souls, about her. Her diary entries, this is Eugenie, show how exhausting this work of mercy can be. The more she gave herself to the poor souls, the more there were who desperately clung to her and pressed her to give everything she had. If we realize that God is behind all genuine apparitions of souls, the conclusion must be that he is so eager to release the suffering souls that he allowed them almost to force her to consume her powers in their service. But also from her diary, it transpires that she herself became more holy, more purified, more selfless in the process. God's grace is multifunctional. End of quote. And that reminds me of something that my wife said to me last night when I first brought up this topic. And she was talking about praying for the souls in purgatory. She says, you know, in so many ways, you know, Trish said, God wants us to give ourselves selflessly, yes, but also selfishly, in the sense that we get back something. The more that we give, we can't outgive God. That's certainly true. God loves a cheerful giver in so many ways. And when we give of ourselves, we actually are changed in the process. God does something for us and changes us. And that's exactly what happened to this woman, Eugenie, that these souls in purgatory sought out her prayers because she was living with God, very holy. And it was almost too much for her. They were like, oh, they're dragging all my energy. They're just, they're almost like, you know, parasites in a certain sense. They want me to pray for them all the time and make sacrifices. But in the process, she herself became more holy, more purified, more selfless. And that's how God, his grace can work. So just really quickly, how can we help these poor souls? How can we help them? Well, the first thing we can do, obviously, is to pray for them. The Catechism says in paragraph 958, our prayer for them, the holy souls in purgatory, is capable not only of helping them, but also of making their intercession for us effective. So essentially, they're going to return the favor. They're going to pray for you. So that's great. Now, obviously, the best thing we can do, when we talked about this yesterday, is to have masses said for the holy souls. And when these souls have manifested themselves and asked for help from people, they have said that the best thing that people can do for them is to have masses offered on their behalf. It's the best thing you can do. Secondly, it's prayer. Secondly, and the mass is the greatest prayer of the church, the one sacrifice of Christ. So we also need to pray for them. The rosary especially. They love the rosary, especially apparently invoking Our Lady under the title of the Immaculate Conception. Apparently that leads to a special outpouring of grace for the souls in purgatory. We can also offer other sacrifices. We can give alms. We can do some mortifications. These hidden sacrifices, they really, really benefit from these, according to the testimony of one of the souls in purgatory. And then we can also offer our work, our ordinary annoyances and things that happen throughout the day, you know, big problems, little problems. We can unite all these things to our prayer, offer them to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, doing our work well. All these things can really help. So here we're just going to close this little section here. We want to hear from you and your phone calls on this, 888-914-9149. Just want to just say this traditional prayer for the holy souls in purgatory. O most gentle Heart of Jesus, ever present in the Blessed Sacrament, ever consumed with burning love for the poor captive souls in purgatory, have mercy on the souls of your departed servants. Be not severe in your judgments, but let some drops of your precious blood fall upon the devouring flames. And do thou, O merciful Savior, send thy holy angels to conduct them to a place of refreshment, light, and peace. Amen. That's a great prayer. And we'll be right back after this with your calls, 888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Flexible Premium Life Insurance. For less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We want to get to your phone calls right now, 888-914-9149, talking about the holy souls in purgatory. Let's go now to Deacon Martin from Gary, Indiana. Hi, Deacon. You're on the air.
Hey, Cale. You were asking about a saint who was known for chasing away demons. I believe you were talking about Saint Teresa of Avila.
Yeah. I know that she was known for that. Was she also the one that this demon appeared to her in the guise of Jesus, and she said, "Where are the wounds?" And he didn't have any, and she said, "Get out of here, you're a demon."
Yep, that's her.
Okay, it was her as well. Okay, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. She seems to have had a lot of these encounters for sure. So, hey, thanks for clearing that up. I appreciate that.
No problem. Take care. Enjoy the first weekend of autumn.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're into fall now officially. So thank you very much, Deacon Martin in Gary, Indiana, and God bless your ministry. Not too far from Chicago, also the home of the Jackson Five. I always remember that. Gary, Indiana. Let's go now to, back to the phones. Let's go to Lucy in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Hi, Lucy.
Hi. I heard your piece, and a few years ago, I read Father Don Calloway's book about the rosary, and I remember there was a piece where he mentioned that in Lourdes and parts of France, it's very common for people to pray an extra decade at the end of their rosary for the holy souls in purgatory, and it's common to find rosaries with six decades rather than five for that reason. So my husband and I, we actually, most often, like 90% of the time, we will pray, unless we're really, really crunched for time, we'll pray an extra decade for the holy souls in purgatory. Yeah, it was in that book, I remember. So so we always make sure to do that. And when we go by cemeteries, we pray for them too. But yeah, I thought listeners might appreciate hearing that. Okay, it takes an extra two minutes, I'll pray another decade.
Lucy, thanks for that. I hadn't heard of that practice, but certainly commendable. I think the more Hail Marys, the more decades we can pray for the holy souls in purgatory. I think that does pay off, as that article mentioned. When they do appear, they tend to mention this, like, hey, the more you can pray the rosary for us, the better. We need those prayers. And so thanks for sharing that with us, Lucy. Appreciate that. That was Lucy in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Maybe we can convince Father Rocky to add an extra decade to the family rosary across America. There, you might have to stretch out the show to an hour. I don't know. I don't know if he'll do that or not, but thanks for that, Lucy. All right, now let's go to Sister Mildred, who is in Gallup, New Mexico. Hi, Sister.
Hi, Kale. In the movie of Saint Faustina, one of the sisters that she lived with in community appeared to her first in the window and then disappeared. And then she went into her bedroom and woke her up and she said, pray for me.
Wow.
And so the sister left, and she was carrying a candle. So Justina, she gets up, get dressed and goes out. And she doesn't see Sister anywhere, but she sees the candle at the foot of the statue of the Sacred Heart.
Oh,
so
wow.
She knew that she had been there.
So Sister, you mentioned there's a movie about Sister Faustina. What's the movie called? Because I haven't seen it.
It's called Justina.
Oh, Justina, okay.
Saint Justina. It's on DVD. That's how I saw it.
Okay, I thought you said Saint Faustina. Okay, so this is Saint Justina. Okay. Okay, great. And what religious community do you belong to, Sister?
Huh?
I said, and what religious community do you belong to, Sister?
Oh, I'm a little sister of the poor.
Okay. God bless you. God bless you. And please pray for me. Pray for all of us here at Relevant Radio. And thank you so much for calling in. Thank you for that.
Welcome. I'm reading her diary now, but I haven't got to that part yet, or else I would quote it for you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sister. I appreciate that. And may you be blessed with that spiritual reading. That's wonderful. Sister Mildred in Gallup, New Mexico, please don't be a stranger. Call back anytime. Appreciate those prayers too, Sister. And we'll pray for you as well. All right. Let's go now to Michael, who's in Panorama City, California. Now, Michael, I'm glad you called back because I think you had this question yesterday and you're a victim of the fact that we ran out of clock, and so I'm glad you called back.
Thank you, sir. I enjoy your show, and I enjoy also your teaching that you do earlier in the day, so I've listened to it a few times. So God bless you. Keep up keeping the word and sharing the word.
Oh, thank you, Michael. I appreciate that. Please pray for me. And yeah, we are having a great time on the Faith Explained show at 12:30 Central. You can listen to it live or you can catch the podcast later. We're looking at the book of Exodus right now, and I've always wanted to do that book, so I'm really enjoying this myself too, and I hope you guys are benefiting from that show too. So, Michael, what was the question that you wanted to ask about?
Yes. Yeah, and a quick comment to that, a quick comment before that. You know, Jesus said about Lazarus that he was asleep. Like, so Jesus seemed to refer to death as a sleep. And that's the way my mom passed about 10 years ago. And I might kiss her picture and I say, but I'll see her in the resurrection. So that's the way I look at it, that she's asleep, you know, until the resurrection.
Okay.
And along with Yeah, along with that is where is these verses. I was wondering what your take on it in Ecclesia. Okay. I'll try to read it fast. It says, I'll just go to verse 5, skip verse 4 and 6. It says, for the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have they any more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love, their hatred is now perished, neither have they any more portion forever in anything that is done under the sun. And verse 10 said, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave, whither thou goest. And now just two more verses. This one is Isaiah, I skipped to 38, verse 18 and 19.
Okay.
It says, for the grave cannot praise thee, death cannot celebrate thee. They that go down into the pit cannot hope for thy truth. The living, he shall praise thee as I do this day. The father to the children shall make known thy truth. So I was just wondering, what's your take on those verses, and also Jesus saying that death is asleep, about Lazarus and the little girl that was 12 years old when he said, I'm mm-hmm. going to wake them up? Yeah.
Yeah, first of all, Michael, thank you very much for your kind words, and thank you for calling in. Now, in case you couldn't hear quite what he was saying, I had a bit of a scratchy connection there. Michael was asking about this concept of, do the dead know anything? Are they aware of anything? And there's a verse in the book of Ecclesiastes, and by the way, the mass readings from the Old Testament the last couple of days have been from the book of Ecclesiastes. I think this is a difficult verse to interpret without interpreting it in the context of the whole book. I'm going to talk to you about that in just a second, but here's the verse that Michael quoted. It's Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 5. It says, for the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, even their name is forgotten. Now, a lot of people will take that verse and use it as some sort of a proof text for a couple different things. Some people think that it proves something called soul sleep. And in fact, Seventh-day Adventists, if you know anybody who belongs to this group, they believe in something called soul sleep. This idea that once you die, you don't know what's going on, you're sort of unaware of anything, it's like you're asleep, and then boom, you wake up and you're in the afterlife and you're at the general judgment. So is that what it's really talking about in the book of Ecclesiastes? And by the way, other people will take that verse and they will use that to try to prove what's called annihilationism, this idea that, hey, once you're dead, that's it. You know, God's going to annihilate the soul. I don't think that's what's going on here at all. There are many, many verses in the Bible that talk about the idea that the soul has some knowledge of what's going on even prior to the general resurrection. St. Paul says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. And I know it's a parable. I do know it's a parable, but Jesus did tell the parable in Luke chapter 16, don't forget, about another guy named Lazarus. Now, of course, there was his friend Lazarus who died, and Jesus brought him back from that. He didn't resurrect him. He resuscitated him. Lazarus had to die again. He didn't get his final resurrection body there. And yes, Jesus did refer to his death as he has fallen asleep, but I'm going to wake him up. And they're like, well, Lord, if he's sick, just let him sleep. He needs to sleep it out. No, he's dead. You guys don't understand what I'm saying. So they're a little bit thick sometimes, the apostles, but Jesus talked about another Lazarus in his parable about the rich man and Lazarus. And so Lazarus, of course, winds up the poor beggar in paradise. He's at Abraham's side. He's in eternal blessedness. The rich man is tormented in hell, which is called Hades. But yet he knows what's going on. He even can sort of see Lazarus with Abraham, and he's like, man, I wish I was there. He can talk. He can remember things that were happening in this life. Now, I know it's a parable, but I do think that there may be some application here as well. The other thing, too, when it comes to the book of Ecclesiastes, and a famous song from the Birds, turn, 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 to everything there is a season. That was the reading today. There's a time to plant, a time to harvest, a time to live, a plan to die, all that sort of stuff. Does it really say that, or is that just I'm thinking too much of James Bond, No Time to Die. But anyways, having said that, Ecclesiastes, the book of Ecclesiastes, if you read that book, it doesn't sound super hopeful until the very end. It's really all about the meaninglessness of life under the sun. The teacher talks about life under the sun, but it's only beyond the sun. You know, it's only from the perspective of God that life and everything that happens makes sense, and it's not empty. So when it talks about the dead who die, quote unquote, under the sun, it seems like their life is over. It seems like that's it. They're done. But that is not the case. There is, of course, an afterlife. So I think part of it is understanding the kind of book that you're dealing with here. But at the end, it does give this note of hope. And don't forget that the fullness of Revelation has not come yet in the person of Jesus Christ, who reveals more about the afterlife. And we do know, of course, from Catholic teaching as well, the official teaching of the Church, that there is such a thing as purgatory. There is, of course, heaven. There is hell as well. There's really two destinations. Everyone who's in purgatory is going to heaven. We can't forget that. But the soul does retain consciousness in the afterlife. It's sort of the essence. I view the soul as the essence of who we are, our personality, all this stuff. So interesting question, Michael. But yeah, I don't think that verse from Ecclesiastes, and he mentions a couple other verses from Isaiah. I don't think it should be interpreted that way, although certainly many have saw it that way throughout the ages, but I don't think that's the case. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. All right, let's go to Melissa in Texas. Hi, Melissa.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I sure can. Hey. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, hey. So I just finished this book, and I highly recommend everybody get a copy of it.
Okay.
It's about Maria. It was an interview with Nikki Elk to Maria Sima. And she was from Austria, born in 1915, died in 2004, so not very long ago. And she even had J.P. Coo's blessing. She had many bishops' blessings. She had, you know, spiritual directors. But for 64 years, the Holy Soul visited her. And when reading that, it was so fascinating because it was almost like a catechism. And it's very prophetic too. She talks about Lourdes, Fatima, but the question—it's a question and answer, which makes it so unique because it's many of the questions that many of us have, and this guy is asking her these questions, and she's answering them because the Holy Souls have told her the answers to these questions. But
interesting.
It's a fascinating read, and it's really, really, really telltale and about what's to come too.
And so the book's called "Get Us Out of Here," Maria Sima. Who says she was visited by Holy Souls. I haven't heard of that, but thank you for telling me about that, Melissa, and our listeners as well. I can't comment on that. I haven't seen the book. Perhaps she's a little bit like the person that was mentioned in the book Hungry Souls, who's getting all these visitations from souls in purgatory. I don't know. Interesting stuff, but apparently JP2 knew of this person, so this is the first I've heard of it. But I do thank you for alerting us to that. There's Melissa calling from Texas. We're up against a break now. We got to take a break. But when we come back, more of your phone calls. Plus, it's also the feast day of St. Padre Pio. And I think that's very much linked into what the book of Ecclesiastes talks about, that there's really no meaning in life under the sun and the suffering that must be endured without God. And someone who suffered quite a bit, of course, was Padre Pio himself with his stigmata. We'll be right back after this. It's Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
All right, we're back. 888-914-9149. Had a fun discussion before the break about the Holy Souls in Purgatory. And today's also the feast day of St. Padre Pio. In fact, exactly 20 years ago today, Padre Pio was canonized in Rome, and one of the things he's most known for, aside from his many supernatural deeds, are, of course, his mighty sufferings, especially the stigmata. the stigmata. And we talked before on this program, and some of you have seen the viral interview that actor Shia LaBeouf did with Bishop Robert Barron about how he converted to Catholicism. He's been in a pretty dark place in his life. He converted to Catholicism by playing the role of Padre Pio in a new movie, which was just released on September the 2nd, called Padre Pio. And you'll have to consult your local listings as to which theaters you can catch this in. I don't know how widespread the release is. But here's a clip from the trailer.
I know you'll give me what I need. I know you will not refuse me. I need courage. I know you will provide. War is a terrible thing. Do not let Satan take advantage of your suffering.
We put our flag in good hands, and we win.
If you ever come back here, I kill you!
It feels like a sin to question these things. It feels like a sin to be angry with the Lord.
There is no greater love than this, to give one's life for one's friends.
In nomine Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti.
Say Christ is Lord! Say Christ is Lord! Get out! Get out!
All right. Yeah, she wouldn't say it. She wouldn't say Christ is Lord. He's like, get out of here. So yeah, Padre Pio was pretty intense. And it was an intense experience for Shia LaBeouf to play Padre Pio. In fact, he converted to Catholicism. It's an incredible story, and we covered this before. And Dr. Matthew Petrusik, who teaches at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, California, wrote an interesting piece about this on the Word on Fire website about how Padre Pio really guided Shia LaBeouf to faith. Both of them were wounded in different ways. Of course, Padre Pio with the stigmata, and Shia LaBeouf with a lot of moral wounds and just the wounds of life that result from living apart from God. And a lot of people talk about the new evangelization. We've heard this term quite a bit. John Paul II talked about it a lot, the new evangelization. And many say that evangelization, and Dr. Petrusik talks about this in his article, should lead with beauty. Now, you know about the transcendentals, right? Truth, goodness, and beauty. But he had a really nice way of putting this in his article. He said, you know, sometimes beauty is really the, he didn't quite say it like this, but beauty is the one that you need to turn to first, because think about the other two, truth and goodness. The secular mind, when you mention truth, you got to adhere to the truth. Ooh, they take a step back. I don't want to hear about this. You know, in a relativistic world, what is truth? Like Pontius Pilate said, what is truth? That's the way a lot of people think today, of course. Truth is a person, ultimately, of course, the person of Jesus Christ. Truth was standing right before Pilate. He was looking him in the face. So the modern mind might take a step back when you say, I've got the truth. And what about goodness? Now, whenever somebody tries to do something good, especially in the name of God, there are always a lot of skeptics, always a lot of doubters. What are your motives? Why are you doing this? I don't trust you. And let's face it, people have been wounded by the church. And so they find it hard to trust. There's no doubt about that. But what about beauty? Beauty can kind of break down the barriers in a lot of ways, because as Matthew Petrusik puts it, that's the beauty of beauty. That's the beauty of beauty, because it possesses this capacity to help people see things in a new way without any kind of threats. Like when you walk into a beautiful church like St. Peter's in Rome or Notre Dame in Paris, you see the beauty, and it just... People are just amazed. No matter what their background is, they may be very secular in their personal lives, they can appreciate, at least hopefully, the beauty. And that can often lead people to conversion. And that's what Matthew Petrusik says happened to Shia LaBeouf when he played Padre Pio. He was kind of blown away by the power of the beauty of the Catholic faith. And so he really didn't know too much about Catholicism before He played this role, and he didn't even really want to know anything about it. He was trying to revive his career. He'd been involved in all these scandals, all these accusations. He'd done some bad stuff from his own admission. And he was actually more interested in reading about what the so-called new atheists had to say. Sam Harris, Christopher Hitchens, people like that. He didn't care about saint biographies, but he did have to read about Padre Pio to prepare for the role. And that's really where the grace of God stepped in. And he says that it saved his life. And so what was really interesting too is that when he was interviewed, Shia LaBeouf said that, hey, look, I'm a street tough. And he said he made his way through life by being what he calls a feeler. So I felt my way through life. And then when he started studying Padre Pio, he said, this guy's kind of like me. He called him a quote unquote professional feeler. What does that mean? Well, his emotions, especially when he was celebrating the Mass, there's all these legendary stories about Padre Pio celebrating Mass and how intense it was. It would take a long time. And Padre Pio would be aghast if he ever saw somebody looking at their watch during Mass. He certainly wouldn't be happy about priests wearing watches during Mass. And I think even John Paul II wore watches during Mass. I could be wrong about this, Pope Benedict. I could be wrong. But he was like, don't you dare, you know, look at your watch during Mass. This is we're in an eternal moment here. And so he would get really emotional. And Shia LaBeouf said, and he talked about this in his interview with Bishop Barron. He talked about his love for the Latin liturgy, for the Latin Mass. And we had a good chat about this on the show recently. A lot of callers were calling in saying why they loved it. And here's what I was trying to describe something, and I couldn't quite put it in the right words, but I think Shia LaBeouf did. I think Shia LaBeouf did when he was talking about the Mass. I'd mentioned to you guys that I had a relative that he doesn't know anything about liturgy. He doesn't read the writings of the church fathers. He's not into theology at all, anything like that. But he had to go to Mass one Sunday, and the only Mass he could find was a Latin Mass. He was blown away by this thing. He didn't understand what was going on, but he kept talking about it for weeks. It really touched him. And so this is what happened to, I think, Shia LaBeouf, because he was participating, looking at the Latin Mass and the Masses that Padre Pio would say, and he couldn't understand them, but he felt like he was being let in on a secret. He didn't understand what was being said, didn't understand the words, but he was being taken out of the realm of the intellectual. That's how Matthew Petrusik puts it in his article about this. He was taken out of the realm of the intellectual, and he was put directly into the realm of beauty, feeling, and a connection with the sacred. So this is how beauty touched his heart. And this is unbelievable. And as you know, we mentioned this before, Shia LaBeouf was in a really bad place. He said his life was, quote, on fire. He was, quote, unquote, nuclear. Even his mother stopped calling him, didn't want to talk to him. Shame, guilt. And he even had a gun on the table at one point. He thought about taking his own life. But how providential it was that he played Padre Pio in this film, and it changed his life. I'm sure Padre Pio, of course, was interceding for him as well. And he said this. He said, if I could wrap up what I got out of the Gospels in two words, he started reading the Gospels, some Capuchin friars that he was living with, trying to get into their lifestyle, playing Padre Pio. They encouraged him to read the Gospel. And he said, if I could wrap up what I got out of the Gospels in two words, it would be these words. Let go. Let go. Just let God take away your sins. Let go and let God. We've heard this a lot. But that's incredible. But I just thought it was really incredible how beauty was able to override and bypass, in a certain sense, his intellect to touch his heart and his soul. And of course, there's plenty of stuff to chew on intellectually, theologically in the Catholic faith, for sure. But this is how a lot of people are going to be reached, is through this medium of beauty, if you will. And so that's amazing. That's amazing. And here's one little quote. This is the last quote from the article here by Dr. Matthew Petrusik. He says, Shia LaBeouf has found the living God, and it seems has chosen to say, yes, I will it. I will it. And that's sort of a reference to the fact that Padre Pio was able to will his experience. Yes, I, whatever God wants, I'll accept it, even if it's the stigmata. It's not that he was looking for the stigmata. Trust me, it was a major cross for him to carry. He also actually engaged in battles with demons. And there's this famous story about Padre Pio, who was fighting a demon in his room, and he sees his guardian angel just standing there, just not doing anything. He's like, why aren't you helping me? And the guardian angel said, well, because you're winning. I mean, you didn't need my help. All right. So this idea that Shia LaBeouf has said, like Padre Pio, yes, I will it. I want what God wants. But he didn't start the journey to this point by thinking hard or reading books or even doing good works, as important as all these things are. That's the truth, and that's the goodness part of it. But he found God because he, as a wounded man, was introduced to another wounded man, and that's Padre Pio, the wounds of the stigmata, who mysteriously was smiling, not in spite of his wounds, but because of them. And it was so arrestingly beautiful that he couldn't look away. End of quote. So really, really nice article by Dr. Matthew Petrusik on Shia LaBeouf, Padre Pio. We'll put a link to that in the show notes if you want to check it out. All right, let's go back to the phones now. Let's go to Michelle in Downers Grove, Illinois. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can. You're on the air, loud and clear.
Okay, great. I over the years, I've developed a little devotion to the Holy Soul. And I kind of came across a devotion for myself that I started passing on to family and friends. So I go to the hobby and craft store, and I get like one of those home decor lanterns, mm-hmm. and then I get a battery operated candle, and I start and I put that in there, and it'll burn for about 5 hours a day. So I put it on for the evening, and then I put all of my funeral cards in there, and I kind of collect souls.
Michelle, that's a great tip. I'm so sorry. I tried to squeeze in the call. I wanted to get to you. We're out of time, but I'm glad you got that tip in. Funeral cards and a lantern. Keep praying for those people. Let's pray for the holy souls. Please pray for me this weekend. God bless you. It's Cale Clark Show. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.